The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Financial Times Big Read, a weekly podcast featuring the best of our long-form reporting from around the world. I'm Molly Mintz from the Opinion and Analysis Desk. Theresa May's moment of truth is coming. In the 2 years since the Brexit vote, the British cabinet is still negotiating with itself and the European Union. With the impending release of a white paper and an important cabinet summit at Chequers, the Prime Minister is edging towards an agreement that looks like a single market for goods, but not services, says FT political editor George Parker. Is this the maddest thing ever seen in politics? Or is the United Kingdom's economic future finally being figured out?
It has been a satisfying 2 weeks for Britain's Brexiters. Over glasses of rosé on the House of Commons terrace, Eurosceptic Conservative MPs last week toasted Theresa May for snuffing out a rebellion by her pro-EU faction and passing the law that severs Britain's 45-year membership of the EU. "It's been a good day," smiled a leading Tory grandee above the sound of clinking glasses. The previous week, the Prime Minister put an even bigger smile on the faces of Eurosceptics when she proclaimed that a Brexit dividend would help to pay for a £20.5 billion spending boost for the National Health Service, echoing the infamous promise on the side of the Leave campaign's red bus during the 2016 referendum campaign. Boris Johnson, Foreign Secretary, tweeted, "Fantastic news on NHS funding. A down payment on the cash we'll soon get back from our EU payments," adding the hashtags "Take Back Control" and "Brexit Dividend." Mrs. May's claim was all the more baffling given that her government has already accepted that Brexit will leave the public finances £15 billion worse off, wiping out any savings from EU membership fees. Yet behind the public expressions of confidence, many Brexiters have a nagging fear that Mrs. May is about to betray them and their beloved project. As the Prime Minister prepares to travel to Brussels this week for an EU summit and a Brexit reality check, some Eurosceptics fear the worst. 2 years after the Brexit vote, the British cabinet is still negotiating with itself. The real talks in Brussels have barely started. Mrs. May will be rapped across the knuckles by her EU colleagues for the slow progress. But when she returns to Britain, she'll face a much more challenging summit. A cabinet meeting at her Chequers country home in early July, where she will finally confront the question she has dodged for 2 years. What does she actually want from Brexit? Mrs. May's willingness to indulge Eurosceptics over the NHS Brexit dividend left some smelling a rat. One well-connected Tory Brexiter says, "When you hear her say something like that, you have to look over your shoulder to see if a juggernaut is about to run you over." Mr. Johnson, in remarks to Tory Thatcherites leaked to BuzzFeed this month, warned there was a high chance that Mrs. May was about to violate her red lines. He said she would try to keep Britain locked in orbit around the EU, in the customs union and, to a large extent, in the single market. Their suspicions are well founded. Close colleagues of Philip Hammond, the Chancellor, say he only went along with the fiction of the Brexit dividend as part of a broader pact with the Prime Minister that the Chequers summit would see a decisive push towards a softer form of Brexit. "That was part of the agreement," says one minister. Mr. Hammond, confronted with a stubborn deficit, in spite of almost a decade of growth and near full employment, will tell cabinet colleagues at Chequers that the NHS funding boost has left his coffers empty. If they want more money for other public services, Britain's economy will have to grow faster, and that means a smooth Brexit. The Chancellor is weaponising Britain's fiscal weakness, pointing out that the country's slide close to the bottom of the G7 growth league since the Leave vote has left the public finances badly exposed, just at the time when health, housing, schools and defence are crying out for money. Mr. Johnson knows the potency of this argument. In his taped private remarks, He took aim at Mr. Hammond's mumbo-jumbo, adding, "The fear of short-term disruption has become so huge in people's minds that they've turned into a quivering wreck." Mrs. May's moment of truth will come at Chequers when her two cabinet camps square up to thrash out a white paper on the UK's plans for a future relationship with the EU. Tory Brexiters say they are confident Mrs. May will stick to her promise to take Britain out of the single market and customs union and take back control of its money, laws and borders. But the ground is subtly shifting. Jacob Rees-Mogg, a leading Brexiter MP, says he and his colleagues sometimes feel like toads being boiled in water. The outline of Mrs. May's strategy can already be discerned. It is hidden in plain sight, but gradually becoming clearer to those who are connecting the clues contained in various speeches and policy papers. The evidence suggests Mrs. May wants to keep Britain in a tight customs relationship with the EU, and something that looks suspiciously like a single market for industrial goods. Services and financial services would be covered by looser agreements. Some fear this will end up with European Court of Justice rulings over the goods sector, crossing one of Mrs. May's red lines, and possible payments to the EU budget. The threat last week by Airbus to shift investment out of the UK unless a smooth Brexit is guaranteed will strengthen Mrs. May's hand. It is far from clear whether the EU would accept such a proposal, but it is certain that the Eurosceptics will not like it. Mr. Johnson told his Thatcherite colleagues this month that Brexit would happen, but added, "The risk is it will not be the one we want." The most obvious sign of Mrs. May's intent is her answer to the so-called Irish backstop question, the legally binding and open-ended guarantee demanded by Brussels that there will be no return to a hard border on the island of Ireland. In a paper published this month, she quashed protests from her Brexit secretary, David Davis, who threatened to resign, by committing the whole UK to close ties to the EU's customs union until or unless another solution was found to avoid checks along what was once a militarised frontier. Eurosceptics fear the backstop will become the front stop, especially since Mrs. May's cabinet are still squabbling over two alternative customs solutions, both of which have the disadvantage of having already been scorned by Brussels. Mrs. May's allies say the Chequers summit is likely to come down in favour of a variant of the so-called maximum facilitation customs proposal, which would use technology and trusted trader schemes to minimise disruption at the Irish border, but not remove it altogether. Sir Ivan Rogers, Britain's former ambassador to the EU, told an FT conference this month, "It won't run, and there isn't a single supporter of it in the EU, and they won't ever agree it." Pro-EU cabinet ministers give a nudge and a wink that they're prepared to sign up to a version of the MaxFac plan at Chequers, because even if it did fly in Brussels, the technology and bureaucracy needed to make it work wouldn't be ready until well into the next decade. "It does have its challenges," smiles one Remainer minister. In the meantime, thanks to the Irish backstop, Britain would effectively be part of the EU's customs territory, collecting tariffs for Brussels. Mrs. May's plan would keep Britain within the EU's common external tariff, severely limiting the UK's ability to strike independent trade deals, one of the biggest prizes of the Brexiters. Mrs. May's Irish backstop plan this month also contained clues about an equally big problem that is about to hit the Eurosceptics. While the customs proposal tackles the issue of tariffs and rules of origin at the border, the government paper said an approach on regulatory standards will also need to be addressed. The Prime Minister is edging towards something that looks much like a single market in industrial goods to counter the need for regulatory checks at the Irish border or any of Britain's ports after Brexit. "It's a proposal under current consideration," says Charles Grant, director of the Centre for European Reform. He wonders whether Mr. Johnson and fellow Eurosceptics might quit rather than swallow it. The clues are everywhere. Britain wants to stay part of EU regulatory agencies, and this month Greg Clark, the business secretary, made a little noticed announcement that Britain would seek to remain part of the European standards system, rejecting suggestions from Liam Fox, the pro-Brexit trade secretary, that the UK might be better off aligning with the US. Meanwhile, Mrs. May, in her Mansion House speech in March, noted that as part of a comprehensive system of mutual recognition, Parliament might choose to pass identical laws in the goods field to the ones adopted by the EU. though she insisted Britain was leaving the single market and that any mutual recognition deal would have to be policed by an independent body, Eurosceptics fear that some of these caveats would be lost in future negotiations on trade with Brussels. Mrs May's aides admit that coming up with a Chequers plan that bridges the yawning gulf in the Tory party and might end up being negotiable in Brussels is daunting. The landing strip is very narrow, admitted one aide. But Sir Ivan, who advised Mrs May on Brexit until being ousted in early 2017 for offering unwelcome counsel, believes one potential landing zone would see Britain push for an industrial goods customs union, accepting EU rules and ECJ jurisdiction in those areas and financial contributions, while accepting more divergence in services, notably financial services. He says this might be sellable to Tory Brexiters if Mrs May could persuade the EU to let Britain restrict free movement of people, a big factor in the 2016 referendum, in exchange for accepting a less favourable deal for the lucrative services sector. While Mr Hammond insists Britain could secure a trade deal covering financial services, the Bank of England believes the city could flourish outside the EU's regulatory orbit. Mr Barnier has also said that splitting up the single market and the four freedoms – free movement of goods, services, capital and labour – is unacceptable. He also points out that nowadays goods and services are inextricably bound. Car sales, for example, often come with finance packages. But Sir Ivan claims that in the trade talks, which will only really start after Brexit next March, Brussels might show more flexibility if Mrs May proposed a deal focusing more on goods than services. Candidly, it's a bloody good deal for the other side of the table, he says. The EU has a surplus with the UK in goods, but not in services. So they get massive continuity in trade on the goods sector, and from their perspective, they screw us over on the services sector, he adds. If Mrs May pursues this compromise at Chequers, there are already rumblings that the Tory right will try to topple her. But mainstream Eurosceptics believe Mr Johnson and his supporters will not dare to use their nuclear option. If they bring her down, there will be an election and they'll be deselected, said one senior Tory MP. I hope their principles are big enough, he continued. The Eurosceptics are also divided in their tactics. Michael Gove, a leading pro-Brexit cabinet minister hoping to succeed Mrs May as Tory leader, tells colleagues that the priority is to make sure Brexit happens in March 2019 and that its flaws can be fixed later. Brexit is a process, not an event, says one Gove supporter, adding, if you don't like Brexit 1.0, you can always have Brexit 2.0. Mr Johnson, on the other hand, wants to get Brexit right before Britain leaves. The backstop will become the front stop. Boris knows how this works. Transitional arrangements become permanent, says one ally. What they can agree on is that if Brexit fails to live up to the promises they made in 2016, it will not be their fault. The stab in the back narrative is already being rehearsed. Mr Hammond is already being lined up as traitor in chief. Dominic Cummings, mastermind of the Leave campaign, says Mrs May was turning Brexit into a train wreck. Remainers still hope a senior government Brexit figure, perhaps Mr Johnson, will eventually say that the final shape of Brexit is so far removed from their original dreams that Britain should stay in the EU, creating public demand for a second referendum. Despite events such as the large anti-Brexit march in London on Saturday, this is widely seen as a forlorn dream. One pro-Remain minister says it's an effing disaster. If Boris had the guts, he would admit it. We're going to throw away any sovereignty gains we might have had. We'll be rule takers on goods. The ECJ will be involved. We'll be part of the single market on goods and not services. It's the exact opposite of what we should have been negotiating. The minister adds, the EU will love it. For European leaders in Brussels this week, the psychodrama in Britain has become little more than an irritating distraction. They're focused more on pressing issues of migration, trade wars, and Eurozone reform. Yet the final shape of Brexit is finally becoming clearer, and the economic future of Britain, a country that will soon become the EU's biggest third country trading partner, could rest on next week's Chequers talks. Ken Clark, the pro-European former Chancellor and longest-serving current MP, is not optimistic that a Solomonic moment of clarity is imminent. He said, "This is the maddest thing I've ever seen in my whole life in politics."
Thanks for listening to the FT Big Read. If you like what you've heard, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on all the usual apps. We're rethinking our podcast strategy at the FT, and we'd love to hear your views. Please tell us what you like and don't like about our shows by following the link in the episode description, or go to ft.com/podcastfeedback and enter our prize draw. This episode is produced by Molly Mintz.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.